Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Another edition of the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast. Last time we saw this dude, we were in his garage with monster cars, sweet video game setup, golf simulator. Now we are doing it with technology on the computer. We don't have to drive all over the place. We all get each other. Ricky, Jesse Chavez, good friend of yours, good friend of the show, one of the original members of the podcast. Now, we get to call him a World Series champion, and he has sweet-ass headphones. Look at him. He joined us right now.
Yeah, man. What a story, right? I mean, I feel like a lot of us saw the tweets and the stuff being said about him and his journey, man. I mean, I remember, I probably, if you guys get a chance, listen to our podcast we did with him a couple years ago, and you'll see the story, you'll hear the story, but what he's been able to accomplish and if you ask him, I'm sure he thought he was out of the game, you know, and then all of a sudden he gets a call and he's there with the Atlanta Braves and shoot, man, one of the key pieces in that bullpen. And now, you know, we saw him on TV raising that trophy up. It was, I mean, I get chills talking about it, you know, just because I think I understand and know the story and the ups downs he went through to get to this point was unreal. You know, and dude, I mean, shoot, man, what a story, what a story. And you know what? And I'm sure he'll agree with this. The best thing is listening to those bullpen guys talk about him and what he meant to that bullpen, not just performance wise, but going out there and you know, I still say it to this day, you'll never be able to, there's no price on a veteran presence in a clubhouse. Like, And we saw it, you know, with Jesse in that bullpen and how much the guys really cared for him.
Yeah. The episode, if you want to go back and listen, is episode number 8. We're up to number 65 now. Jesse Chavez in 2019. And bring him in right now. World Series champion of the Atlanta Braves, Jesse Chavez. Dude, all right, I'm going to give you the cliche reporter question. How does that feel?
Oh, man, it feels great. Didn't hit me till the parade, actually. Just tried to stay quiet and keep it as calm as can be, and because I'm not one to get too excited over things or anything like that. Other than my kids being born, it's probably about it. But we just try to keep it even keel here at the house, and I try and take it out there on the field, and I not act like I've done it before, because that's not something that happens very often for a lot of guys. But you know, I just try to take every game as every game, and knowing that there's an, you know, play another game tomorrow. And but this time, you know, we were the last team standing, and this season felt a lot better than years past. That's for sure.
You know what my favorite part was about this whole thing, Jesse? It was I texted the group chat right away. I was like, everyone's celebrating, and there's fucking Jesse just pounding a Corona.
Oh yeah,
you mean like this,
my guy.
I think he was the only guy drinking Corona.
But the best part, right, though, is when we went to his palace a couple years ago, first thing he said, you guys want Corona? Like, you stay on brand, bro. You stay on brand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's all I drink.
Then a good tequila.
That's it. Need
that. Let's go, Corona.
Hey, where'd you get Corona from? Because the clubhouse celebration is sponsored by Budweiser. So do you have your own stash?
My guy, Alex, and Steve Perry, they take care of me there. As soon as I walk in the door, they're like, hey, you know where it's at. It's in the back. It's like, perfect. So they take care of me there. Playing on so many different teams, going to so many different guys, got to basically email them my order before we get in, you know, a little peace of mind for after a ball game.
Yeah.
It's fun. I talk to those guys more than I talk to, you know, my teammates during a series on the road. You know, those guys make our job a little bit easier.
The clubbies?
The attendants, they're amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
Clubbies, the cooks, they're amazing. They're just people just like us. Just the fact that we get to put a jersey on, they get to put a different jersey on. So it's kind of one of those things that I kind of take pride in, going out of my way to talk to them and, you know, just getting to know them as a person, because they don't get that much, you know, interaction very often. It's, can I get this? No, let's have a conversation for a little bit. You know, we're there for 6 hours a day.
Dude, before we start the game. That's something, before we get to all the other stuff, that's something right there that shows a lot about your character, Jess, because I've known you, I've met you a couple times, and you've always been super nice. I saw you during the playoffs when you guys were playing the Dodgers, and I'm just standing there by the bullpen. I remember sending you a message like, hey, I'll be out there, I just want to say what's up, whatever. And the first thing I said was, I don't need tickets, I'm not asking for tickets, I'm not doing that, because everybody was there, because I'm there working. But you were like, no, let me know whatever you need, blah, blah, blah. I talked to you, said, hi, what's up? And you just, it was the NLCS. And you had just pitched the day before, and you walked by like it was June, like no biggie, just another game. And like that calmness about you, I remember texting Ricky like, dude, he's in the zone right now. Like, oh, well, let's just go.
And stuff like that rubs off on other guys, you know, the young guys in that bullpen. And again, that was cool, man. Some of the stuff that I heard those guys say about Jesse, you know, Tyler Matzek being one of them. And we saw the World Series that he had, or the playoff run that he had, but a lot of it was credit to Jesse, you know, and the calmness he's able to maintain in that bullpen. And I'm sure he keeps it loose. And again, you can't put a price on veteran guys in a clubhouse. And I'm so happy for Jesse and for that whole thing.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Where did you start the season? Let's go back to it. Were you in spring training with anybody?
I was with the Angels in spring training. Did something in my subscap, right in my armpit, when I was figuring out my arm slot, and I actually figured it out on the pitch that it happened. Sat through a couple days, and then ended up having to pitch because my out was the following day with the Angels. Then I ended up rolling my ankles, covering first base, so that was icing on the cake. And then ended up, you know, the next day, getting released, took my out. They wanted me to go to Salt Lake. I wasn't ready. I didn't want to go anywhere hurt because I'm not going to rehab anywhere hurt. Just not my deal. It's not beneficial for me or the team. So I just came home and gathered my thoughts, got healthy a little bit, let my ankle heal so I could throw the ball a little bit. Then I just grabbed the ball up on the basketball court and said, hey, if it hurts, it hurts. Probably it. Threw it. Didn't hurt. Said, all right, give it a chance. And then I got ready, and mama got tired at me from yelling at the TV about all these mistakes I was watching. And she goes, go make your own. So I left and made my own, I guess.
Well, so you did come close to retiring, Jess. Did it crept up?
It crossed my mind, yeah.
No way.
Yeah, I didn't want to – I'm not one to retire hurt because I've been durable my whole career. And then this happens, and then I roll my ankle. I'm like, oh, what's next going to happen? You know, I was able to manage through so long, you know, this whole time and get through it. And being able to know my body so well, that kind of helped out for the last 5 years, I guess. And I was like, well, this is it. Might as well be it here. That ball that left my hand on the basketball court was the one that made me want to play again.
Wow.
Wait a minute. You're at in your backyard, right? The basketball court there. Mm-hmm. Did you throw the ball into the canyon?
No, I threw it into the net.
You threw it into the net?
Anger. Yeah.
So you told yourself, I'm going to throw it once. If it feels good, I'm still playing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you watch me warm up, I get up and I just get going. If my arm goes, it has to go.
Yeah.
If it doesn't get ready the way I need it to get ready, then it's time. I've always told myself that. I'm not gonna force myself to fake health when I've been healthy my whole career.
What the hell?
Well, Jess is just a different beast, man. Yeah. He's a different beast. And that's what makes him so good, and that's what's made him so durable. So you're sitting at home, you throw that pitch in your basketball court. Do you start making calls, or did you have tryouts, or did Alex Anthopoulos just call you and say, hey, we got a spot here?
No, I told my agent, give myself a week, get some numbers down. I get myself a week of throwing, 6 days, and then go throw off the mound. And then I went through off the mound at PFA. It's Dave Coggins' place, former pitcher with the Phillies. Mm-hmm. And Joe Kelly uses Pocket Path.
Okay.
And so we ended up getting some numbers with him and sent him off to all 30 teams in an email. And Braves bit.
That was the only team.
And I was couple nibbles, but the Braves were the one that were like, okay, let's see what we can do.
Jesse, what was this though? You went to Gwinnett? Mm-hmm. What was this?
That's in Charlotte.
Yeah.
So Gwinnett is a minor league team?
Yeah, that was AAA for the Braves.
So you were there. So they're the only ones that been. I remember you posted that picture. I'm like, damn, where is this at? That's Striper, because that's in Charlotte.
Charlotte, it's a big league city, dude. It should be a big league city. That place is dope.
It really should. It really should. That stadium doesn't do it justice from that picture. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
So you went, so the Braves bit, and you went there, and you're like, okay, I'm back in the minor leagues. Like, what's going on here?
I had to look at the roster, and I wasn't going to go down and, you know, get pissed off for one outing or if it didn't go my way. And, you know, I don't have a veteran out there to kick my ass, you know, say, hey, you know, no, it's not it, you know, type of deal. So I looked at that roster, and sure enough, you go up and down that roster, you're like, wow, Gold Glover, All-Stars, guy played in World Series, guys that played in playoffs. It's like, okay, wow. Then you got the is catchers, young the catchers were good. Oh, dude, the roster was stacked. And we even said we were going to be the first AAA team to become an expansion team mid-season. that's how confident we were, and it's a testament to the Braves of who they bring in and their character.
That's right. You had Travis Snyder on your team, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Goins.
We had Gogo, and then Kipnis was at second base. Yomer Sanchez was playing third. We ended up getting Lucroy for, you know, a couple weeks in.
Jesus.
you go in the outfield was our, you know, guys with some big league time, former prospects. Our top prospect was there. Top four prospects were there, actually. And then our staff was just legit.
Wow.
That's old cool. guys, young guys, mixture of, you know, guys that have been around, just bounced around without any time or, you know, handful of outings.
That's awesome because Beto, Alex Anthopoulos, former Blue Jay GM, obviously had some familiarity. He was familiar with some of these guys, you know, the Snyders of the world, Goins of the world, and obviously Jesse Chavez when he was in Toronto and pitched in those playoff games too. So it just shows you that I think he probably had a vision, you know, and that vision, shoot, man, that it hit right on the money with those additions that you guys made at the trade deadline. And then you hear Mr. Scott Boras. Did you see what he said about you guys?
Oh, yeah. That's slappy. I mean, I get it. You got money. But, like, come on, dude. Have a little feel. Show a little credit. You know?
Yeah.
You represent some of the guys on that team. So, like, let's – you know, it doesn't – you don't need to be 110-game winner that everybody wants to see the Cinderella story. No, we were the Cinderella story. That's what you want to see.
Yeah.
You want to see those type of guys win.
Absolutely.
The gamers that had to battle adversity. The team that had to play the AL East in Interleague.
It almost seemed like he was, it was very one-sided. Like, he almost, like, was talking about he wanted the Dodgers to really, really make it. And, obviously, it didn't happen for him. And when I saw Chipper Jones's tweet, too, and he kind of ripped him a new one. And, I mean, again, stay in your lane, you know? Like, no need to say that to me.
Yeah. Just represent players and be quiet.
Jess, when you look at this, like, for you personally, I mean, you've been in the major leagues or professional athletes since 2003, since you left Riverside. you're there and you understand what's going on as a pro. You go up and down. Ricky's talked about this on the podcast too, when you're at the highest of the highs and you go back to the minor leagues and you're like, all right, you got to be a pro about it. But for you, last time you were in the minors was 2013. When you were with Oakland, you're 29 years old. You're a day away from maybe retiring. What was it like going into that minor league clubhouse? Like, not that you have an ego, but you still got to have some kind of pride. Like, the fuck am I doing here, right?
Yeah. You know, it did cross my mind. What am I doing? A few times. But it brought me back to when I got to trade it over to Pittsburgh and I was in AAA. That bullpen alone had 33 years of big league experience. In AAA now, just the bullpen.
Fuck.
Wow.
And they're all sitting there. And they taught me how to go about the business a little bit. And obviously, I'm going to take every word they got. Like, they're all sitting at the cool end of the bench. I'm sitting over here by the water cooler at the bad end with a bad angle with a sore neck. And they're all sitting there with their feet up. So I'm like, well, this is what it is. It's what it is. You got to wear it. But they taught me how to go about things and bus trips and carrying yourself in AAA as an older guy. Because they all saw that I had potential to be around for a little bit, just based on how my arm bounced back. And then, and my work ethic. And then, you know, having fast forward it to, you know, 2021, this was in 2006. You're like, wow, all right, now you're that guy. Okay, how are we going to go about this and not let these guys develop into the new age and keep it going later on? So that's all I tried to do. And if we had the older guys there, that we wouldn't let anybody get in a bad attitude. There's no, you want to slam your helmet for what? Like, it ain't going to get you called up. You know what I mean? This one at bat ain't going to get you called up. Like, that ain't it. We're all here for the right. We're all here and for one reason. That's to make each other better and win. And we had the right coaching staff. And, you know, from Mike Moroth, who has big league time, you know, to Yasopo, to
he was your manager, right?
Yeah.
And he was your former teammate? Did you ever play with him? I played with him.
No, I didn't.
No?
I did not.
Wait, Marcus Tuias Yasopo?
No. Oh, no,
no. Brother Matt.
Matt, yeah.
Marcus is a quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that was your manager? That guy's young. He might be younger than you.
He is. Yeah.
I'm sure that helped, Jess, right? I mean, I'm sure that was the first time in your career that you've had that you were older than the manager, but I'm sure he probably understands the clubhouse vibe and what it's like, that he probably ran a pretty chill ship, right?
Oh, yeah. He let you know if you weren't doing your job, you know, if you weren't prepared. That was his biggest thing. If you weren't prepared, he wasn't, like, that's when he got upset. You know, if you wanted to take BP, you took it, but you better take it if you're slumping. You know what I mean? Type of deal. You know, if things aren't going your way and you haven't got off the mound, you might want to get off the mound.
Dude.
You know, just if you're not making ground balls, you might want to take some ground balls if you're not feeling them the right way. If you're not getting in the right position, you know, that probably didn't get us a double play the right, you know, just little things.
Yeah.
That he wanted you to be prepared for, because that's what's going to be exploited when you get called up.
Yeah.
When you got called back up to the majors and you look at the Braves uniform, which is – a team you've been with before, like, what was that like? I mean, we always ask everybody, what's it like the first time you get called up? What's it like when you get called back up as a vet?
And a guy who was close to retirement.
Yeah.
Weird, because it felt like deja vu this time. I got traded from Cincinnati when I was with Atlanta, and I get called up to Cincinnati. They're in Cincinnati when I get called up.
Come on. Wow.
Yeah. So I'm like, wow, this is whoa, this is kind of weird. You know, last time I was in the manager's office to say hello, I was getting sent out. You know, and Bobby was sitting in that manager's seat. You know, and this time it's Snicker, so it's kind of weird. You know, I was saying bye to Snicker last time, I'm saying hi to him this time. You know? But it's kind of cool. It was kind of one of those things that you never know what's going to happen. Just all you got to do is understand each off season and what you got to get accomplished for the next season that you didn't do the previous one. And then you should have a job every year after that. because you obviously are trying to get better. And this happened to be one of those times where I was able to stay in the game long enough to go back there and help bring a ring back to that city.
My goodness. Like, that's what we loved in the podcast, hearing the stories, because everybody's path is completely different. I mean, you're a guy with JUCO, and it's like, oh, what are you doing here? Guys that you passed up, guys that you played with, or whatever. Yet the path of, what does that say, Rick? Just don't be a jerk. Yeah. Get along well with people. Treat somebody nice. And like, first thing Jesse starts talking about is be nice to the clubbies. Like, it's not that hard to be a nice person, and you get rewarded for it. It's good to see you, man.
Yes, I mean, we've talked about this before. That's one of the things for me that was key too. Be nice to the person that's opening up the door for you at the stadium. Be nice to the usher that's, you know, taking care of your family for tickets. Be nice, like, just be a normal human being, you know. And like Jesse said, those people don't get a lot of interaction, but they do a lot behind closed doors, you know. And you know, from clubbies to anyone working at the stadium, you know, they're there every home game. And be polite, be nice, don't be a jerk, don't be an asshole. And I learned that at a very young age, you know, and this is why I always say I'm able to have the connections that I have when I go back to Toronto. I was only there for 4+ years in the big leagues. It's not like, you know, I was a super big time household name, you know, but I treated people the right way. And you know, that's something that I preach to both my boys, you know. It's please, thank you, and be nice to people, and that's it. You know, it doesn't take any effort at all. You know, it's got to come from within the heart. And if you're an asshole, people, as Jesse knows, especially clubbies, they take a mental note, and they'll make sure they okay, as an asshole.
Yeah, but yeah, you literally have to go out of your way to be an asshole in this game. It's incredible. Like, me and my kids, we talk about it all the time. Just because you're mad at that person or you're mad at the day, you can't be mad at me. I didn't do anything to you. Like, why, you know, so why do you have to be an asshole to that person if they're just there doing their job? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, they mess up. Well, you mess up on your job. They can't come to you and say, hey, why'd you leave that pitcher up the middle of the plate, you jackass? No, they don't do that. No, they don't. It's just, you know, we all mess up. So, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Just, oh, you turn pro. Go on, Rick.
Oh, no. Okay, so once you get back up to the big leagues this year, and I feel like obviously we can talk about this season for the next 5 hours, you know, but you get called up back to the big leagues. Do they tell you? Because normally I feel like they're like, oh, it might be a temporary thing. Or did you know what role you were going to come in as? Or was it just like, all right, we need a long relief guy. We need an opener. We need this. We need a guy that can throw every, you know, twice or back-to-back days. What was kind of the deal when you get called up, or like what they say to you?
Nothing. Like, you're going up. I was like, all right, where? He goes, Cincinnati. I was like, ironic. And then it's like, all right, I'm actually getting ready to leave the hotel, and I get a call from Snit. And he goes, hey, you're starting today. And I was like, all right, so I'm not going to the field then. So I went back into my room and took a nap for a little bit and got up, got on like the 4 o'clock bus and went to the field, did my normal thing that I normally do, no matter if I'm starting or relieving. If I'm working out that day, still get it done. And then next thing you know, all right, pitched into the third, waiting for the tap on my shoulder. Cause you know, you're a veteran, like, they can cut you like that. You were a cheap sign. Like, all right, you just came in and do your job or not. And okay, no tap on the shoulder. All right, I'm going to shower and go back to the hotel. So I went back and showed up the next day, and the rest is a wrap.
and this,
I had no idea.
This is what he means by that, Beto. He's pretty much saying, like, I got into the third inning. I threw a lot of pitches. They needed somebody to eat up some innings. Usually those are the guys that they say, okay, thanks for your services. You know, go back down, see you later. You know, we're going to add whoever we need to add back to the bullpen. And I mean, obviously that wasn't the case with Jesse, but normally that's what they do with long relief guys.
Wait, Jess, you were expecting to get the tap to go back to Gwinnett?
Well, I had agreed to that part of the call up that I wouldn't take my release. For that reason, where, you know, if I got sent down, I was going to go home. Because obviously I didn't do my job and I didn't, you know, deserve to pitch in the big leagues or stay in the big leagues. But for that reason, and I was like, all right, I know I'm not going to do bad. I know I got a chance to go back up in this organization if I just go back and do my job. So that's kind of where I was during that part. But that's when I didn't get the tap, it was similar to when I didn't get the tap in 2013 when I was with Oakland, when I threw 5+ in the, we had an extra inning game where we went 18 against the Yankees. And I was waiting for that tap there. I didn't get the tap, and I just, that's where I went off. And I didn't see AAA again until this year.
That's great.
So, you know, I don't look for another 8 years, but maybe a few more.
I always tell people they're like, oh, do you like teams? Like, I don't root for a team or anything like that. I love sports, and I love watching the elite athletes of the world perform at the highest level. You guys are the 1% of the 1%, and not just because of your talent, but because the mental strength that you have to deal with that. Where, Jesse, you're saying, hey, I know my role, I know what I got to do, but forget what I've accomplished in this game. It's the pressure to go out there and think that I have to perform. If not, there might be a tap, and that might be it. Like, just to be on that thin line, that high wire act that you guys have, that's what people don't understand of how hard it is to do what you guys do. And it's kind of hard to put into words also. But not only are you performing at an elite level, trying to throw a guy who's trying to hit it 500 feet, you're also looking at your shoulder like, hey, there's a 21-year-old smoke thrower down in the minor league who could take my spot tomorrow and never come back. And the evolution of where you're at to go from being a 21-year-old guy with everybody's prospect to, like, hanging on. Man, maybe because I'm just waxing poetic now, but, like, you guys are crazy. You guys are absolutely crazy how you can deal with that. And, like, you just talk like, yeah, that's just it. You know, how do you stay that calm without having a pulse moving, bro?
Moving around so much. Just can't get too high, can't get too low. Gets back to, you know, the path that I told you guys on the first podcast. Wasn't easy. So if I keep it that mode where it's not easy.
That's something a lot of players don't have in this game. What Jesse has, you know, the ability to be able to stay even keel. We're all victims of it. You know, when you're high, you're at a high, you're just, you feel it. When you're at a low, and it's sometimes tough to dig out of that hole. Well, Jesse is like, it almost seems like good game, bad game. Hey, I'm still going to have my Corona after the game and move on next game, you know, but it's hard. It's easier said than done, you know, a lot of games. And again, I'm sure a lot of those guys in that bullpen, once you came in and they probably saw the way you went about it, they're probably like, oh shit, we can take some notes off of this guy and approach it the way he approaches it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a lot of good talks down there this year. A lot of them were, for me, philosophical ones, a lot of thinking outside the box, which you have to when you're out there, because the game plan could switch just like that. You know, you got to read their feet, read their hands in a matter of a second based on what they just did the previous pitch. So that's where a lot of my conversations came from, just thinking outside the box down there. And that helps me keep it even keel, because then you don't ramp it up too much. You look at a crossword puzzle is easy if you think about it, because it's all words that you use every single day and everything you know about that you've already seen. It's just a word scramble. You just got to put those words and keep it simple.
Jess, did you become that, like, I do that as a reporter. I'm like in the newsroom and I'll start talking to the interns, and I'm like, I become that salty old Theo guy, Theo Beto, that just like giving them all kinds of knowledge, and you kind of see them roll their eyes a little bit at you, but like, no, but seriously, don't get married in your 20s. Like, you know, stuff like that. Like, I started telling them stuff like that. But did you become that guy in the bullpen, the older guy, the salty vet, who just like giving them all the knowledge? Because I'm looking at, you're the oldest guy. You and Charlie Morton were 37 or are 37. Everybody else was in their 20s, late 20s.
Yeah, we weren't salty. I mean, shoot, we watched a season of Ted Lasso down there.
Then you got to believe. So, you believe.
Yeah, you got to believe, yeah. But no, it was – I just don't like seeing guys not doing what they're supposed to do in order to go out there and do their job.
Okay. You know?
So get up and stretch, you know. If you're one of those guys that just thinks you can sit there and – get up and go and do your job, you'll be able to do it for a handful of games. It'll catch up to you. Trust me. I was there. So my thing is just try to let these guys not fall into bad habits that I went through, that I fell into, that kind of made these numbers and teams go here and there and be like head scratching to you, like, you know, you're better than that. Why are you doing that type of deal? And I just saw, I think it's all down to preparation.
So you're like,
and it should,
you were Yoda down there.
I feel like since we last did our podcast in these last probably 2 years, the game's changed a lot. So for you, how did you go about adjusting to what the game is now?
Being able to use not the analytics for the pitcher side, using the hitter's analytical side in my favor for what I've learned throughout the years. Huh. What their swing does, what their swing can hit, you know, what it's compatible for. And then I just try to stay away from that, but without changing my strengths. And, you know, sometimes my strengths are their strengths. Well, let's go. Let's see who's going to win. I'm just going to put it in a better spot than your swing is.
Yeah, I like that.
Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. But I'm still going to make that convictional pitch where I know it's going to go where I want to. And especially now that my arm's healthy, my mind's clear, I know what I want to do every time I step on the mound. Now that I'm able to get natural extension like I was a few years ago, it's all starting to slow down for me per pitch, per at bat, that I'm able to do to get back to keeping it even keel.
See? All right. So now you're watching Ted Lasso down there. There's a bullpen you guys are watching, all right? So you got to make sure that the Jamie Tartt, you don't let that guy happen in your bullpen, right? Somebody who was the Roy? You Roy?
No.
You weren't Roy Kent?
We had our No, we had our catcher was Nate. Open catcher was Nate.
Who was that now?
No, it was Jimmy Leo. He was our guy. Our bullpen catcher.
Your bullpen catcher was Nate?
Yeah. Who would be Roy Kent?
See, we don't want to call anybody Jamie Tartt. We'll leave that alone. But
yeah, no, there wasn't a Jamie Tartt.
All right, who was the coach though? Like, who's Beard?
I think Beard's Cranny, our pitching coach. So even keel, but Cranny's the dude. We called him the dude.
The dude
from Big Lebowski.
Oh yeah, hey, gotta give him a White Russian, man. The carpet ties it all together, bro.
Right.
So when you guys go on this run, Jesse, you guys obviously were on the outside looking in. You guys pretty much lost the top baseball player in the world, maybe top three, you know, in Acuna. And obviously that can obviously be devastating to a clubhouse. Like, to see how you guys rebounded from that and to be able to make the run that you guys made, I think it showed the character of this team in veteran presence like yourself, Freddie Freeman, obviously, a guy that's he's gone through the bad, the good, the ugly. He's been through it all. Charlie Morton obviously won a World Series. He's a veteran. How were you guys able to keep that together when you guys lose Acuna?
We didn't believe it at first. We were just like, oh no, it's just, you know, it just came down wrong. You know, we're like, all right. You never want to believe. You think he's superhuman. I mean, the kid's unbelievable for his age. And, you know, the knowledge that he has, he's smart. He's a smart ball player. So you're just like, oh no, it can't be a thing. And we're going to wake up tomorrow and he's going to walk into the clubhouse feeling fine. You know, that's what we all thought. It's what we all wanted to think. And then we hear the news after the game and we're like, all right, well, you know, our bullpen was very strong. Our group text messages is hands down the best ones I've ever been a part of, as far as keeping everybody going, keeping everybody on the same page, letting everybody know, you know, stuff's not done. And we said, when he went down, all right, we got to step up. That's what we said. You know, it's time for our job now. You know, we lost a bat. We got to see where this is going to take us, but we got to go out there and do our job even better. But what I mean by even better is paying attention to the small things that don't elongate the big innings, not trying to do more or less. And then, you know, we went on a roll. because we knew if we fell down that path of losing him, we lost.
Yeah.
But we knew Alex and what he can do. He always has a trick up his sleeve, and you know that. So we knew something was going to happen. We just didn't know when. And then when he made it, you're just like, okay, that's the first piece. And you know he's not done, because it's going to take more than one to replace that guy. Not saying, and, you know, the other guys came in, and with Jock, Solaire, Rosie, and we traded for Rosie, and Rosie had a, you know, messed up oblique. So you're just like, all right, this is something that's going to be pretty good for us. And then you just saw the guys just falling into the dominoes just falling into place. And you're just like, all right, boom.
Yeah.
And then now it's just up to us to play chess the rest of the way out. Once we got through the domino stage, we were like, all right, let's get through this chess stage.
Yeah. And I mean, shoot, man, Milwaukee had an unbelievable run this year, and that pitching staff was nasty. And then you guys rolled right through them, and then come to LA, talk to us about how sweet it was to beat Dodgers in their backyard.
It was pretty nice. It was pretty cool. It's pretty fun, you know. But the fact that everybody looked at the 88 wins is amazing to me. And you don't look at the character in the lineup. You know, you don't look at the people in that lineup. It's like, man, our whole infield had over 25 homers, almost 30. Dansby missed it by two. You're like, wow, that doesn't happen. Yeah. You know? Okay, then you go to the outfield. All of them have at least 20 combined, or at least 20 total, and that includes Ronnie. I think Ronnie was second behind Doobie in total homers accumulative, and he missed, what, the whole second half? So you look at that lineup, and you're just like, give them credit one time.
Yeah, yeah, the credit they deserve.
Tip your hat one time.
Just once.
They're not mainstream.
Obviously, you guys, when you guys get the Dodgers, you're like, shoot, we match up perfect with them position by position. That's the thought process, right? You're saying, I don't give a shit if it's 100 wins, 120, whatever it is, we match up with them perfectly.
Yeah. And you could say, oh, well, we were banged up. We lost this person and that person and this person. Well, we lost the one guy that equals all three of those guys.
And then so, Mike Soroka, who was supposed to come back.
And we lost Soroka too. Exactly.
Yeah.
So where's the answer there? Where's the comeback on that one?
Yeah.
So, and we lost Travis, our catcher, for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
No. Oh, but we had him at the end. So what? We lost him for 3 months. Yeah. We lost Ronnie for the second half. We lost Mike all year. So what? Now we kept our mouth shut. No excuse, because that's who we were. This organization went through it before. They went through it in 2010 when I was here, when Chipper blew out, when he messed up his knee in Houston.
Yeah.
And then Billy blew out in the playoffs in San Fran, and that's when Kimbrel became Kimbrel. You know, but you just, and then we lost Prado that year as well. So you go up and down the list, you're just like, oh, well, Klaus was banged up. That guy had 18 ice packs on his body after every ball game just because he had to go out there and play. But he's a gamer. He's an old school guy.
Yeah.
You know, so you just go out there and look at that stuff, and you're like, all right, that's why these guys were able to get through this whole thing with the injuries that happened to this team, because it's happened before in the past year, and they knew how to overcome it. They didn't make an excuse like some other teams do.
Jess, you've played for the Dodgers. You know what it's like there. You play in the Angels organization. You know what it's like there. Now, Dodger Stadium, when it's 55,000 people, I mean, what's that like coming in there? And you started that game and looking around. What's that like on the field?
It's cool. I always tell guys to look up around. They're like, what do you mean? I said, there's a lot of decks up there. Like, look around. It's different. There's four decks, three decks up there. You know, it's not like AAA where there's two decks and you got a whole outfield. That's what I'm talking about the younger guys when I explain to them. Walking, when you're running in, look around. Because when you get on that mound, you're on an island by yourself. You know, so make the most of it when you're running out there. Experience it, because
Oh, he hung up. See? Dodger fans got mad. They disconnected him. He'll dial back right now.
There no, and I get what he's saying.
Here he is. Here he is. Here he is. Here he is. Let's see. You got see, Dodger fan cut you off, man, like they did in the bullpen.
Right. No, I tell him, just run in and experience the atmosphere, because this doesn't happen often, especially your debut and playoffs. It's hard to get here. Trust me, I know.
And what about beating the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium? How cool was that?
That was awesome. It was great, especially in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, my time wasn't great there. From a performance standpoint, then being left off a roster, you kind of take that to heart a little bit.
Yeah.
As a player. So I'm not saying it's ill will. It's just you take it to heart from a professional and gaming standpoint. You know, talk to you after the game or before BP, but we probably went after, because it's not, you know, one of those things we do after a game, you know, especially in this type of things. We'll talk to you during BP tomorrow, but other than that, you just let the night be. But yeah. It was one of those things where it made it that much better.
Yeah.
And I never experienced the playoffs, but I definitely feel what Jesse's saying there as far as looking around. And even, you know, it can be your first day in the big leagues. It can be your 10th start in the big leagues. It don't matter for me. I always, like you said, I looked around, I looked up, and I was like, okay, all right. Especially if I was on the road, I was like, all right, it's time to shut 50,000 up. That was the whole thing. You know, it's let's go. It's go time, because you are on an island by yourself. Nobody's there to help you. Nobody's there to say, hey, calm down, or hey, yeah, you rely on your catcher. That's about it. But for the most part, I think it's good. I think if you don't look around, then you become very tense. Whereas if you're looking around, you take a deep breath and you're like, all right, this is what I've worked hard for my whole life. Like, this is it. Mm-hmm. This is the moment. And I couldn't imagine what it's like in the playoffs, where it's magnified times 1,000, you know, than it is a regular season game. But you do see it. You do see it with you, Jesse. Like I'm like, damn, does that guy even have a heartbeat?
No, he doesn't.
He gets a big out and he's just walking off the mound. Like, all right, next game, you know, like what do I have to do next game? That's it. You know, again, it's easier said than done for a lot of guys. But man, if you can model some of the stuff, especially young kids out there listening to this, if you can model some stuff from Jesse, let it be that, you know, so how he's able to keep his composure, and, you know, there's no highs, there's no lows. It's just, hey, get the job done. Next game, I'm going to prepare to the best of my abilities. And that's all there is to it.
That's all, man.
Yeah. Learning how to breathe. You know, that's the biggest thing that I learned once I broke my ribs. Learning how to breathe, that helps me out there every moment. You know, we breathe the wrong way. We breathe with our chest. That, you know, we'd end up hyperventilating our own selves. We breathe through our ribs, you know, and our, you know, the bottom part of it. We start getting an understanding of what type of air intake we are capable of and how to lower that heart rate down a lot faster than we think we're doing by breathing with our chest.
Wait. Hold on. Breathe?
Yeah.
So when you're on the mound and you're taking those, you're like breathing different?
Yeah. Well, you breathe through your ribs, not your chest.
Oh, explain this, man. We're giving people knowledge here. You want to get to the big league? Learn how to breathe with your ribs.
I don't want to mess it up. I don't know the right terminology, but yeah, no, I just try and like keep my, you know, your belly button to the back, like they always talk about, just keeping good posture. Keeping good posture will keep the breathing pattern a little bit easier to go through.
Yeah. That's something, you know, that's something that we were taught in college through the great Ken Revisa at Cal State Fullerton. And, you know, it was always learning how to handle your breathing. It's not just a, you know, it was like, okay, here we go. You know,
really?
Yeah, he was big on that, man. I mean, it's what got me. Like Jesse said, you're able to calm that heart. That heart might be beeping fast, but or beating fast. But when you're taking that deep breath, you're honestly grounding yourself and you're saying, okay, this is the moment, you know, and that's all there is to it. Where you see the guys who the game speeds up on, you know, and the heart rate's going, and you always hear guys say, oh man, that inning felt like everything was going 1,000 miles per hour. Next thing you know, I gave up 5 runs. Well, a lot of it has to do with that breathing technique and stuff like that, and not being able to slow the game down.
Interesting. All right. Learn something new every day.
Watch the guys that they don't do anything during the inning, and then all of a sudden stuff starts getting haywire, you know, back-to-back doubles or, you know, double single with one out or no outs. They step off the back of the mound, take off their hat, rub up the ball. Like, you didn't do that at all for the first four innings. You know what I mean? Like, you just see noticeable changes in mannerisms that you're like, oh, this game's speeding up on them. Let's go, boys. Come on.
Yeah. Huh. It's little things, bro. Come on. Things like that we understand, that we see, that you're able to pick up on if you're watching a game. It's true what Jesse's saying. It's 100% true. Like, breathing should be part of the routine for a pitcher, for a hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, you see great hitters doing that. You know, one that comes to mind is obviously Justin Turner. He uses the breathing with the best of them, you know, where he looks at his bat, he takes a deep breath and all that stuff. But, I mean, the breathing to me is something that's a very, very useful tool for any athlete.
That's awesome. I'm going to look into that for my kid. Like, hey, look, because I never even thought about that, where it's just breathing, just like, whatever. That's why we're in the top deck watching Jesse pitch for his 17th year in the major league. All right, let's get to the parade.
17? No.
No.
17 years.
No.
You've been a pro for 17 years.
Pro. Pro. In the big leagues.
Leagues, what, like 12 years?
Big leagues.
I got over 11 full parts of 14.
This is what I want to know, Jess. Now with that playoff share, and we know it's a pretty damn good one, what's in the plans for Hacienda de Chavez,
bro? Oh.
That's what I want to know. What's coming in there?
Well, it's going to cover the carport that's going up outside. The roots that the neighbor's tree made in our plumbing. It's going to cover that little damaged part that they got going for us. Barbecue pits getting redone. It's going to cover that.
That's when you know you're 37 when he's saying, okay, plumbing, barbecue, and a carport. The 24-year-olds are going, oh, I'm going all over the world. I'm buying me a Maserati. I'm buying this.
Jess is like, I'm surprised he hasn't bought that canyon in front of him, saying, all right, this is where I'm going to set up shop right here.
No, a golf simulator after that.
Yeah, you're in your 30s.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. At the parade, why were you trying to get your teammate arrested?
Oh man, he had a wedding in Mexico to go to. No, it was I don't know. He still doesn't know. He doesn't know. I don't get it. I asked him. I was like, "Why'd you get off?" He goes, "I don't know. Still trying to figure it out. I don't know. Just sounded like a cool idea at the time. Turned out to be the wrong one." My wife got the first video on it at the time. She's like videoing, and then she goes, "What's Tyler doing?" She goes like this, and I'm like, "Oh God."
Yeah, you're not supposed to get off the bus. Like, you're on there for a reason.
Yeah, he forgot that memo.
Hey, you're a World Series champ, though. You can do whatever the hell you want. We saw Sergio Romo do it a few years ago.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What did Romo's shirt say? I only look illegal? That's what they wore.
Oh, man.
Right. So, Jesse, what happens after? Oh, go ahead, Rick. No,
this is what I want to know. I want to know, the night you guys win, what is that like for you, Jess? You obviously reached the pinnacle of getting to the big leagues. The World Series, you know, it doesn't happen just for anyone. You know that more than anybody else because you've been in the game for so long. But somebody that finally is experiencing that moment. And to me, the coolest part is how much you talked about your wife and your daughters being a huge part of who you are now and why you were there. You know, you said it. It takes a strong woman to be able to do what she does while you're out there fulfilling your dream, doing everything that you want to accomplish. So for you, what was it like that third out is recorded, you're world champs? You said it really didn't set in for you till after the parade, but holding that trophy, looking at it, what was that moment like?
Running in, you know, you just, my career just flashed, boom, to my eyes. And then I'm like, all right, that happens. Now it's, where's my family at once this whole stage thing's over with and celebrating, because obviously they've went through about just as much as I did, you know, year in and year out. And it's even worse because up until 14 was when they started living with me for the summer. So they weren't living with me throughout the summer at all. So, you know, you think about that and my daughter being 17 now, this is all she known was dad being gone, and for to fulfill this is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm showing the picture on the video right now, and it's like you said, it got some hardware, and like that's that smile that you have on your face, Chess. It's priceless right there. Your kids are happy, your wife is happy, but you can see the emotion of it. Like, I mean, it's hard to leave your kids for a weekend to go away, just like for a big wine tasting or whatever. I can only imagine not living where they're at, especially how involved you are with your life. Look, right behind you in your house, you have all their artwork up behind you, man. Like, that's the kids' stuff right there. Like, that's what matters right there.
That's their little wall,
And like you said, I mean, I'm sure it's not easy. Your daughter being 17 years, that's all she's ever known. But now I'm sure her knowing a bit of what it's like, you know, and seeing their daddy at the pinnacle of it all, raising that trophy, I'm sure for them it was beyond fulfilling.
Yeah, it was pretty cool for them to be there for that experience.
Oh, they got on the bus with you, Jess? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were able to get on the bus and everything. It was cool. But yeah, just seeing their smiles, knowing when I leave, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Did it ever get emotional for you guys? Like, did you ever take a moment where you were like, you know, away from everyone and it's like, you know?
Yeah, no, we had moments every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool, man.
That's pretty cool. Be on the bus with the sharing those moments with you, you and your wife, and all those years of struggling to get to where you're at, and being a day away from saying, I'm going to retire, to where you're at right now. Jess, we're happy for you, man. You know what I like, though, watching your Instagram? Like, you don't post much on your social media, but during the playoffs and the World Series, like, the people that were posting about you were, like, your girlfriend, but, like, the people who've been there forever, it seemed like the ones who are like, hey, this guy was here, or he was undrafted here, or he was doing this and that, going back and forth. It's like, you're easy to root for. You're a great guy. We appreciate your time, but it's also, it just felt like a whole community was there with you, man. Like, you were giving hope to those kids who probably didn't have much of a dream.
Yeah, that's all I want to do. You know, from where we're from, you just want to go out there and give them a chance. And the chance is showing them that there is a chance. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, I don't go out there and try and be more than what I am. No, I just try and go be who I am. And that's all you got to go out there and be, because somebody's watching, no matter where you're at.
Alejandro Cuevas watching right now says, awesome, dude. Couldn't have happened to a better person. Congrats, champ. That's from Alejandro Cuevas.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Marty Party, a friend of mine who's actually a Braves fan. So he's all excited. So if people are watching this right now, check it out.
You know, Jess, it's cool you say that about, you know, you just want to make kids be a good influence on them and say, hey, you know, this is, you know, this can be you. You know, this can happen, you know, to guys like us, you know, who come from the inner city and from, you know, from a Latino background, Mexican background. I just, you know, we're having our camp in a couple weeks, our baseball camp, and that's the one message I relay all the time, anytime I talk to kids, because I think we get so caught up, and we've mentioned this before, Beto, where we get so caught up, our parents do nowadays, having your son be a D1 athlete and do this and do that and have these great expectations for them, where to me, it's like, I always tell the kids, like, it don't matter where you go. You look at a baseball roster, you look at a major league baseball roster, and I guarantee you D1 athletes are probably outnumbered in this game. You know, D1 doesn't always mean big leagues or high draft pick or anything like that. You're obviously living proof of it. You know, it's what's inside your heart and the hard work and dedication that you put into this game that's going to get you to where you want to go. And I think sometimes kids, parents especially, have a difficult time understanding that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard for, you know, being a parent and one that's almost at that level to compete for the next level. When she was in tennis until the pandemic hit, mm-hmm. there was a chance. But like you said, there's no such thing as the right path. There's such thing as a path. That's all you need, you know. So it, like you said, it doesn't matter what travel ball you want your kid to go to because it's the best one that this person went to, or, well, he wasn't drafted out of that travel ball team, you know. this is the best place to go to work out and this and that. Well, he wasn't drafted from there. He's drafted for what he does on the field and between the lines.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's the attitude. That's why when we had you on the first podcast, I can't recommend it enough. Go back and listen to episode number 8 with Jesse Chavez. He tells about the path of going from Fontana to Riverside and to go where he's at. And one thing actually Marty brings up right now, I heard his mom's a longshoreman. Is that true? Because everybody in the ILWU was saying that Jesse Chavez is a longshoreman.
My wife is.
Oh, your wife is. So there you go. Because I kept seeing all the people in Wilmington and San Pedro claiming you. I'm like, I don't know, guys. But there it is. Because everybody wants to claim the champion after. But Jess, I'm back at, look at this right here. Your first year in the minor leagues in Spokane, Washington. You're what, 19 years old maybe? Mm-hmm. Right? Fresh out of Riverside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever think about those days? Like, what the hell was going on up there?
Yeah. Like, where am I going? You know, the only time I went to Seattle was to Washington was the summer before, and I was just flying through to go play summer ball in Alaska. So it's the only thing I knew about that place. But
now, at that team, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Your 7 guys made it to the major leagues. The pitchers, 4 of them made it to the major league: John Danks, Wes Littleton, Justin Thompson. And, you know, you had so many big-time guys coming up there. The perseverance that it takes to get to where you're at, the best advice that you would give to 19-year-old Jesse Chavez back then?
Play with a guy like Ian Kinsler. Watch his path was... His path was pretty similar and pretty cool too, because what, he hit 210 that year or something like that? And then
Ian Kinsler that year was not good at all. Actually, he batted 277. A lot of strikeouts, though.
Okay.
A lot of strikeouts.
Yeah, so the next year we go and he has a thing where he's hitting 210 and like a homer and 4 RBIs. Tell me you're not going to be a power hitter. At the break, he's hitting 411 with like 28 pumps and 40 doubles with like 80 RBIs. You're like, in a matter of 2.5 months, hands down.
Holy smokes.
Then he just goes up as a spot fill to AAA. They're like, yeah, you're going back down the next day. He takes Pettit deep twice. Never saw him again. So you just don't tell somebody you can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, seeing that and then knowing, you know, my background and my history and to myself, I'm like, that's cool because that's a position player doing what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now I just gotta ride that position player wave a little bit when I take the mound. Well, I didn't put my, you know, swagger out there, you know, physically, but I did it mentally and inside.
Damn.
And every night I just tried to take that out there.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too, because it happened to me going into my sophomore year of college at Cal State Fullerton. I was told in front of everyone, the whole pitching staff, our pitching coach went one by one, and he said, Ricky, you've been a disappointment this year, man. Or this fall, you're going to go back to the bullpen, and, you know, you just didn't earn that starting spot. It's like, all right, cool. And again, like you said, Jesse, I took it mentally, and it was like, all right, how can I challenge myself to be better? You know, I'm not going to show it. I'm not going to pout. Whatever, it is what it is. I got to get better. So how am I going to do that? So I continue to work. Opening day comes. Our top 2 starters go down. Who do they call on? The guy that was ready. Me. From there, national championship, fucking Team USA, and the rest is history. It's like my name kind of climbing up the boards, you know, and we could have taken it. It could have been taken either way. It could have been like a pouting session. I could have called home, been like, Dad, like, let's get the hat out of Cal State Fullerton. And I was like, nah, man, like, I came here to earn a spot, and I'm going to do it. So I just asked myself, what do I have to do to get better? All right, this is what I clicked. Boom, let's go. Let's do it. Let's kick some ass. And that's what I did. And that's obviously what you've continued to do at the big league level.
Yeah, you got to instill it in yourself. It's not given to you. You get a little piece of it, but mm-hmm. you got to find that piece and how to use it, because a lot of people use it for the wrong reasons. And they end up, you know, being a one, you know, around for a good season. And then all of a sudden that guy doesn't know how to use that fire anymore. And then he tries to find it and it's not there. Then it's forced.
Yeah. World Series champion. I mean, that's cool, man. Like just to hear it and see you going at it. And I think just because we know you, like the struggle that you had this year of trying to figure out exactly what's going on, that you tell us a story about that you're one pitch away from. All right, that's it. Redo the garage, redo the cars. You know, see what we're going to do, and it's been a good ride. And what's the, like, the weirdest message you got, or one of the coolest messages? I know a lot of people come out like, all of a sudden, right? But, like, you hear from different people.
Yeah, just, can you come talk? Come talk. I've never even met you. I'm not a problem talking to the kids, but don't even know your kid. I just, you know, like, I that's the weirdest thing. I mean, come on now.
Well, you're
where were you at when I was grinding? Like,
you're welcome. Need you when I was grinding.
Yeah,
appreciate you.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me November, send me the info.
November 28th, East LA. It's actually at East LA College. So you played at ELAC. You know what's up?
No, we didn't play there.
You never played at ELAC?
Mm-mm.
Well, it's Ricky's second annual camp at East LA College the Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend. And it's actually a pretty cool idea. We did it a couple years ago, and we do it on Thanksgiving weekend. And it's Ricky gives back to the East LA community, and it's to get the kids from that area, like, because they're not going to perfect game. They're not going to those big showcases. They're not playing for travel teams. It's the kids in their home schools, either at Garfield, Roosevelt, or schools in that community. And it's 50 kids. We select them. They got to write a paragraph as to why they got to get picked. And they got to show their grades and get everything else. And it's more of an opportunity. Oh, see, he don't want to hear it. Come talk. He's got some issues at home. I know that. He's got the service and everything else. Oh, there he is. He's back.
Hello?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so it's the kids, and we select them. And it's a lot of big leaguers or guys that are from in the professional organizations. And it's really cool. And we're making the final selections today, Rick. And it's pretty exciting, man. I know you're pumped.
Yeah, no, yeah. The amount of kids that we had sign up is crazy. We had over 100 kids sign up. We only, unfortunately, had 50 spots because we're limited by the space at East LA College. But yeah, man, it's exciting. It's cool to see all the kids turn out. Obviously, you know, we apologize for the ones that are not chosen. We're doing our best. But yeah, it's a really cool event, man. I know the first one was very, very fulfilling, and I have no doubt that this one's going to be just as good, if not better. Again, it's just giving back to these kids and making them believe that there is an opportunity, there is a chance. You know, it doesn't have to be at the D1 level. It just get in where you're going to play, where you're going to get better, and that's all that matters.
What we do, Jess, is we tell, like, look, here's how you apply for college financial aid. Here's how you get in NCAA clearinghouse. Here's how, look, you might be 5'8". But you have a 4.0 GPA, don't apply to UCLA. Go play at a Division III and use baseball to become a general manager, you know, become something, be analytics, whatever it is.
Let them mention that we made them write a paragraph, Jess. We kind of asked why they should be chosen. And you get we're able to just see some of these kids obviously not have a clue and think it's a joke. Like, we had a few answers two or three answers where one of them is like, because I'm a stud. You know, just shit like that. It was like, come on, bro. Like this is we're here to help, but like we can't work with that. Like, be better, like be smarter, you know, and this is the reason why. Like, I've taken the opportunity to read some of these messages, and a lot of them are great. You know, I'd say about 99% of them, but there's like two or three answers that you're just like,
yeah.
What happened?
And it's a free camp, Jess. You're getting a free camp. Ricky and his friends, all big leaguers or former big leaguers or guys in the organizations right now, like Alan Trejo from The Rock is going to be there, and Jordan Boitis, who runs Long Beach State, is going to be running things. So it's really cool. We got a lot of stuff for them. And then
Jesse knows, do you know Al Quintana?
I don't know.
Al Q from, he was a Blue Jay.
He runs the hitting side of it. He does a tremendous job. Yeah. John Buck said he might roll out from Utah. We're not sure yet, but yeah, it should be fun. Noe Ramirez will be there.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll have a few guys, former. It's free. And just, cool. We just have a good time, man. We kind of just give them some guidance, some drills and stuff like that. Obviously, you can only do so much in 3 hours, you know, and from station to station, kind of the basics of pitching, whatever preparation and stuff like that, stuff that if obviously you make it out, it would be beneficial and cool to these kids to be able to hear, you know, the preparation of it, the drills. And yeah, we just have fun with it, man. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'll go. It's the stuff that we would, you know, it's opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all
the address, and I'll be there.
Yeah, it's all the kids that were there in the bullpen yelling at you, Chavez, at Dodger Stadium.
All right,
Jess, we appreciate you, man. Let us know when we can go visit the trophy.
Congrats.
Wait. Yeah. Right.
Thank you.
You're gonna get a little mini trophy for everybody, right?
Ring, by the way, Jess.
No, I haven't got measured yet. I think I'm gonna go with the middle finger.
Have you seen it?
No,
have you
seen it? No, we haven't seen anything yet. We haven't even got measured yet, bro.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, my finger's itchy. Come on now. I'm kidding. And then I'll let you know when we get the replica.
Hey, what's that hat you're wearing anyways?
Oh, baseballism. L7 weenie.
Good sad line. Jesse Chavez, man, we love you. Appreciate it. Congratulations, man. We'll talk to you soon. We'll hopefully see you at the camp.
All right. I'll see you there.
All right, Rick. Another edition.
All right, fellas.
Of the Let's Go Ricky Roll podcast. We'll make sure you guys go back and listen to episode number 8 with Jesse Chavez. And today, let's share, rate, review. Jesse, where are you at? We can hang up with Jesse.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah. All right. Bye, Jesse. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Later.
All right, Rick. Final things for you. Housekeeping for us. No show next week because it's Thanksgiving. I don't know if it's Canadian Thanksgiving or not, but whatever. No show next week.
We're going to Costa Rica with the family, so I'll be out of town for the next week. Should be fun.
You're going back to your Costa Rica house?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to my Puerto Vallarta house. I'll be in Puerto Vallarta for Thanksgiving.
5.5 hours, 3 kids. Wish me luck.
How many nannies?
None.
You're not taking Aces SoCal?
Hell no.
Oh, okay. All right. The week after that, I am busy, so we will not have a show. Look, it's the holidays. It's December. Things are slowing down. We got to take advantage of golf. So we might do one more show for the rest of the year. It'll be sometime in December. We'll keep you updated. But make sure you follow the Let's Go Ricky Roll Instagram page. You got some big news coming your way. And that's not a tease. It's like legit big news because our good friend Josh Tolley is in a big meeting today. I can't tell you with who, but he couldn't make it. He's all bummed out. But, you know, when you're Tolley, and it's such a big meeting, Rick, that Tolley texted me twice this morning. That's how big a meeting it was. He answered back. So for everybody involved, have yourself a good Thanksgiving, wherever you may be. Like I said, Ricky will be in Costa Rica. I'll be in Puerto Vallarta working a fight, for real. I will be there. And then I'm going to try to play some golf in Punta Mita. Where we're going to retire, I'm going to let you know. Everybody involved, have yourself a good Thanksgiving. If you guys also want to follow Let's Go Ricky Rowe Instagram and also Ricky Romero Baseball Camp on Instagram so you can see some behind-the-scenes footage of what will be at that camp. So for everybody involved, see you guys. Adios.